Hello, Verbal Shenanigans fans. Yes. So before we get to this episode of the podcast, which is great, trust me, Jim Poplinski, former Stanley Cup champion, captain of the Calgary Flames. Yeah, he's on the podcast. Also, our favorite LGBT director, AJ Mattioli, joins us. And then let me just tell you, tune in to the end to hear about Berlew and his weird-ass dates. Listen, having a girlfriend is not going to take the weird out of this man, and that's why we love him, sort of, in a way. But anyways, I want to talk about the sponsors that make this podcast possible. So, first off, we have Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. They bring the best of trivia and craft beer together. Each week, they support a different craft brewery that they offer gift cards to, okay? And you don't even have to be the winner. You could be the dumbest team and still win it. They support New Jersey breweries like Beach House and River Horse and Ramstein and Cricket Hill and Demented and Crows and all these awesome-ass beer things. So, also, if you are a New Jersey craft beer member, you can bring that for bonus points. There's a bonus item every week on their Facebook and their Twitter and their Instagram. So come on out all over New Jersey now. Yours truly hosts every Tuesday at Paragon Tap and Table. That is Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. Now, where would we be without the beer stuff, okay? We love beer here. We love it, which is why we love Manskirt Brewing. That's correct. I said Manskirt, and that is not what Mike Berlew wears on the weekends. That is actually what Joe Fisher wears, okay? He is the brewmaster, okay, of Manskirt Brewing, okay, located in Hackettstown in this old bank building. I suggest you highly check it out. I highly suggest you check it out. That makes a lot more sense, right? But check them out. They got all different seasonally inspired ales, rotating taps, okay? There is going to be a Manskirt Brewing beer dinner at the Tap House Grill in Hackettstown Thursday, June 9th, okay? Four-course meal with beer pairings, of course. Tickets are $45. You could find the event on the Facebook page. Go to Manskirt Brewing, okay, on all different social media, and you will find them. Trust me, they're awesome. Our other brewery sponsor, which how can you go wrong, you know, with two brewery sponsors? It makes me so happy. And I love beer too much sometimes. But let's talk about Demented Brewing, okay? Demented Brewing, okay, located in Middlesex, New Jersey. Insanely flavorful ales. Tap room with 16 taps in it. Okay, Mug Club. You could be part of their legion. Get bottle release, barrel age things. Okay, go to DementedBrewing.com. As far as them, every Sunday they pretty much release a new beer. This past Sunday, they just passed a Kiwi IPA called Be Real. It's probably my favorite by them. So please go check it out. And then next Sunday, C4, their summer IPA, okay, is coming out. So please go to DementedBrewing.com. Finally, let's go over to our longest sponsor. I love these guys, Wolf Nation, WULF Nation. Wake up, live free. You know, it's all about entrepreneurship, doing your own thing, okay? Order apparel from Wolf Nation. Check them out at Wolf Nation on Instagram, okay, Wolf Nation on Twitter, Wolf Nation on Facebook. Wake up, live free, okay? You know, clothing for everybody. Clothing for men, women, children, dogs, grandmas, okay? And you're supporting entrepreneurs, okay? Guys who care about their company, all right? So, Wolf Nation, wake up, live free. All right, people, tune in to a great episode, in my opinion, and enjoy the podcast. Bye.
Hey, guys, this is Kane Callis, and you're tuning in to Verbal Shenanigans Podcast. Stay tuned.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Kind of loud on my earphones.
Oh, is it loud on your earphones?
Well, you just blew out my ears on the earphones.
Can't touch the plane when it's red hot.
Yeah. Is it still loud on your earphones?
A little bit. Oh,
is it still loud on your ears? That's what's weird about this mixing board.
Mm-hmm.
Lean out.
Check one, two.
No, I know what's up.
What's up, Scotty?
That's why.
No, it's low.
Now it should be coming in nice for you.
Check one, two. Still a little low. There we go.
Should be good.
Aw. You made it perfect for me.
Oh, wow. We've been recording that whole minute. As you warm up with Droopy Dog, you fucking weirdo.
No. I guess welcome to the podcast.
Yeah. Welcome or something like that. I'm just
Wolf Nation.
No, we just lost a sponsor.
Nope, can't do it, Scott. Richard's like, that was...
That Droopy guy is something's
that
wrong.
That ended it. Sales went down 500%.
Well, welcome to the podcast, everyone, and we are on episode 108, I think.
Ooh.
I think 108.
Yeah.
Climbing, slowly climbing to
like
more
a
and
mountain
more numbers.
Goat.
Yeah. Yeah, so if you tuned into our last episode, you knew that we had a man who pretended to be a goat. Well, I guess lived with the goat or tried to live with goats.
Yeah. He became one with the goat.
Yeah, Thomas Thwaites. Mm-hmm. So I recommend going back to listen to that because that is what I call the quintessential kind of verbal shenanigans type guest.
Yeah, the definition of what we look for.
Yes, we're not always looking for... you know, someone of name. We're looking for someone who's interesting, and that guy goes right up with the female sumo wrestlers and the poop sellers and you name it. So we were pretty. That was a pretty good interview.
Yeah.
Apparently, a lot of people know of his toaster project.
Really?
Yeah. Like online, it's like a pretty big thing. Like, I guess he got a lot of like acclaim for the toaster project, which was him trying to build a toaster from scratch. Just with all like parts and every element of it, and he said there's like some I don't know 500 elements or something to a toaster. But he tried to be a goat. If you were an animal, if you were to live with pick an animal to live as for a day, what would it be? I mean, considering you already half live as you try to pretend that you're my dog.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, which is really weird because your girlfriend now does the dog voice too.
Yeah.
So now it's and. Now is it not only have you gotten out of control with it over the years?
It's a virus.
Yeah, it's
it's spreading. It's
the walking dog.
Carl, get away from him! Hello, Daddy.
I mean, it's to a point where I wish Obi was like a vicious. Like a Rottweiler or something, and would just bite your neck when he hears you do that.
No, you don't.
I do. I
no,
do. I truly mean it from the cockles of my heart.
Cockles.
But anyway, everybody, welcome back to the show. Frustrating show. 2 minutes before we started, the soundboard just decided to...
say nice knowing you.
Yeah, say goodbye. So hopefully it's not. Hopefully it's just a power source and not the actual board, because that would really suck.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a lot of use out of that, but nowhere near enough use out of that. So we're on the second stringers, the second string board.
The Dahmers.
That I threw together for a while. My channel is, there's something wrong with the gain knob.
Mm-hmm.
So I have it held down with tape, so please, no sudden movements, and if the dog comes near here, just kick him hard.
All right.
He's in trouble anyway. He's, I just told you before this started that the other night he was on my parents' table eating from a plate, like on the table. Not he does jump up all the time. He's a fat beagle, but
what was he eating?
He was on the table licking a plate, like all four standing on the table. So he is not in good regards right now with the old parental.
Come get him, Daddy. This is wonderful.
Units. So yeah, and then today. It was the third day in a row of just pure, ridiculous traffic.
It's been god awful.
So bad. I don't know if it's
287 every time. It's guaranteed
24, 78. But it's been so bad. Like today, I don't get road rage too bad, but sometimes I find when I do get road rage, I yell like the most like things that just don't even make sense, and I think about what did you just say? Like today, I said. like I was I was driving and this
I'd
woman.
I punch you in the cockles?
Yeah, kind of. But this woman, I'm like, you know, like, of course I'm behind a woman! And, like, you know, like, I just become very sexist, racist, prejudiced. Whatever comes out at the time, it's usually not acceptable. It's not PC.
Go 45, Hispanic!
No, it's not. The Hispanics usually are okay. It's the our Indian and Chinese friends around here that... Whew. Anyway, no offense to the Indians or Chinese, but you guys.
Yeah, sorry, Darren.
Driving is just it's just not your thing. It's not your thing.
No.
Everything else is pretty
China,
much.
China, the thing is, they're all bicycles over there.
Right.
So.
Everything
so
else is their thing. Inventing, mass producing. Yeah.
They only know iPhones and those things where you pick it up and carry a man in the basket.
Rickshaws.
Yeah.
Anything with precision, Chinese, good at. Okay. Driving an automobile. I don't know. But it's just been one of those weeks where every time I get in the car, it feels like it takes forever. Then also this weekend was kind of weird. Thursday night I had a show in the city at the Comedy Loft, and I bombed my balls off. It was just a... it's a small room, and the sound system's like an amp, like a little tiny amplifier. And...
Basically, what we're using right now.
Right. And the microphone wasn't really working, so you had to keep it in the stand, and I'm not really used to that. And I followed a guy who played acoustic guitar and sang a song about barbecue sauce. That was his opening song, and then a song about a knight named Gargamel or Galgamon or something like that.
Like a good Memphis barbecue sauce?
I don't know. The song went like this. It was like barbecue sauce. And I just got on stage.
Keep going. I'm dancing.
It wasn't even a stage. I was like, oh, how do I follow that? You know, like, how do And then we had an interesting...
Worcestershire sauce.
Then we had an interesting experience at Table 42. Maybe we'll get into that a little later. I got to decide if I want to light it on fire or not. Like, light the relationship on fire. But we got to get to our guest, okay?
Speaking of flames...
Brian Iderson's on? No. Calgary.
Wrong one, Scott. You're not in traffic. Don't go like that.
Well, I think we have AJ coming on later, too. But,
cool.
A couple weeks ago, we were doing the worst sports songs, and this is another weird thing, how things escalate into getting guests and whatnot, and we were talking about the worst songs, and one of them was the 86 Calgary Flames song. You can't touch a flame...
When it's red hot.
Obviously.
Yeah.
But why don't we...
It was an instructional video.
I think before we do, we really got to get a listen on it.
Of course.
You know,
just
a refresher. You can't go in cold.
No. Was that a pun?
Yeah.
All right, the crowd's going nuts. Worcestershire sauce.
Now, there's a bunch of actual hockey players like Fu Manchu playing trombone. it's atrocious, but we got to get to the real meat and potatoes of this. It's got a nice long intro. Oh my God, it's all these hockey players looking directly into the camera, feeling probably as awkward as possible. That's Brett Hull, too. That's the best part.
I hope he went into the Hall of Fame for that song.
All right, here we go. I think, unless there's two verses. Oh yeah, there's going to be two. Of course. I know, there's some nice highlights of the Calgary Flames. Oh, they're in the back clapping. They're all wearing denim jeans and white collar shirts. So anyway, our guest is Jim Paplinski, who is the captain of this team, but apparently he was not in the Flames video.
What kind of captain is that?
And he probably made the right choice. 25 years later, you got this.
Can't. Like a magic thing, I can't touch your brain when it's
The video is so atrocious. But we have Jim Pilinski. I think you tweeted him or something like that. He responded, I'm not in the video, but I would love to talk. And no deal, I said. And it's been a couple months. I guess I'm having a beer, even if I am playing soccer or not.
That's good for the Cavs and stuff.
Oh, please. You know how many Irish people and Spanish people probably drink before we play? I'm going for after all the races tonight, folks.
When was the last time an Irish guy won the World Cup?
We win the World Cup every day. The World Cup of nationalities.
Hey, calm down, Conor McGregor, okay?
So let's call Jim Pilinski here. Oh, okay. Crap. Now I got to freaking get his email again. I know. My dog is licking a large piece of wood, which sounds gross.
It's firewood, for the record. Everybody.
So, yeah, this guy is captain, and he has his name on the Stanley Cup.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Wonder if he can get my name on there. Just sneak it in 1 year. That'd be cool. I mean, I think if this interview goes well, he'll do it for me.
I don't think so.
No. I'll ask.
Jim Pilinski here.
Hey, is this Jim Pilinski? This is Scott Brennan from Verbal Shenanigans here. How are you?
Good. It's Steph, is it?
Scott.
Sorry, Scott. Yeah, how are you doing?
All right, and this is my cohort here, Michael Berlew.
How you doing there, Jim?
How you doing, Michael?
Doing great.
Can you hear us all right? We just had our main soundboard go down, so now we're on the backup. We're on, like, the number four line of our sound system.
Well, I like guys that have a backup plan. Good for you.
So, Jim, we were just telling the story of how we even got in touch with you. We were doing an episode, and we were talking about all the ridiculous songs that teams have made over the years, and we came across the 86 Calgary Flames song, which I'm sure you're familiar with, but you tweeted us back that you were actually not involved in the song, correct?
Well, I was audience support. I like to think that I channeled my talent into other areas, and rhythm and singing, dancing is not my top ten. And so, the
Jim,
guys,
I'm going to go out on a limb and say it wasn't on the other guy's top ten either.
well, you know it's that old saying, dance like nobody's watching, and Mike Bullard and Brett Hall and Neil Sheehy, they sing like nobody's listening.
Jim, I mean, I think you made the right move, because 30 years later, literally 30 years later, you're on a podcast based out of New Jersey, and we're still talking about it.
Oh, gosh, well, it's fascinating. It's fascinating when you think of a career and you're playing and just enjoying yourself, and I always thought when it was over I'd go on to something else, and it just is incredible. I had a pal flip me a note this morning, and he said 30 years ago or 32 or whatever it is now, I watched on this day you guys win the Stanley Cup, and the other thing I remember was you had lots of hair. So yeah, who would have thought that we'd still be remembering these sorts of things?
I was checking it out. Like, you had some like almost red hair curls on some of these pictures.
You kind of look like me.
well, send me a picture and let me be the judge of that, okay?
Obviously, a much
Jim Pilinski doesn't improve. Yeah. Sorry, Scott.
No, yeah.
No, you are not red hot. Sorry.
But, Jim, I mean, like, we didn't call just to talk about the song, but real quick, with the song, like, how did that come about? Was that a thing that was asked of you guys, or was that, like, someone's idea and everyone went with it? Like, how does that work? Now, I know in the 80s a lot.
Well,
this was the era of the team song.
Super Bowl Shuffle.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know that I would classify that as a team song, but the guy, in my recollection, that gets 99% of the credit was Neil Sheehy.
Okay.
And Neil had a buddy, and we became friends with this gentleman as well, an individual named Cal Cullett. And Cal was in the music business, and somebody got this idea, and she said, hey, I'll get a bunch of guys together. And after practice, we went over to a place called the Back Alley on McLeod Trail in Calgary, and somebody had written the song. I would think that was Cal. And put some music to it, and we all got the air instruments, and I sat and watched it, and We had some guys who could carry a tune. Perry Berezan and Steve Bozak were quite musically inclined. Joel Otto is as well. And the rest of the guys were fillers.
There's so many amazing things about the video, from the outfits to the stashes to the mullets to the denim pants and the white collar. It's great, it's perfect.
Well, give it another couple of years, and I'm seeing mullets around now. There's a pretty good chance that what we were doing is going to come back in style, so just stay tuned.
No reunion tour booked, like the 30th anniversary, you guys get all together and do the song one more time?
You know what? I love that idea, and this go around, I might even get involved.
Is it like a joke amongst you guys? Does anybody ever bring it up, or is it like, oh, God, it's like one of those things you did in college, like you don't want to talk about?
Well, I hadn't really recalled it, and then within the last 10 years, somehow it reappeared with the proliferation of that interweb.
Oh, and you can't hide from anything.
People started asking about it. Yeah, and so it brought back some great memories, and it's a lark. I love your idea of getting the same group together and doing it again.
That
would be funny.
Like, you guys all just skate out to the ice, and everybody's thinking, oh, man, this is going to be a great retro hockey game, and then you just bust out the air guitars, man. That'd be amazing.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, you've got the technology. You can make this happen from New Jersey. Get a hold of Sheehy. He's easy to track down, and that guy will do almost anything.
All right, you get me the numbers and emails, and we'll fly out to Calgary, and we'll make this happen opening day for the next season. But I guess enough of the song. But you know, other than the song, you have a pretty esteemed history in the NHL, and that's definitely something to be proud of. But yeah, were you on the Calgary Flames your whole career?
Yep.
Yes, whole career.
I rolled into Calgary on September 5th, 1980, and I just got very, very lucky. If I would have been drafted by the Montreal Canadiens or the New York Islanders, there's a pretty good chance that I would have never seen a game in the National Hockey League. And I had two coaches in Calgary, a gentleman by the name of Al McNeil, who's still a good friend, as is Pierre Page. And they just decided that they were going to give some young guys a chance. Al McNeil told me, he said, we got a team of characters that need some character. And this isn't going to be about where you were drafted. It's going to be about where we think you can add value. And they gave me a chance. And I started in Calgary, never played a game in the minors, and finished up here and have made my life in Calgary and in Alberta.
Now, you were born Canadian, and you got drafted by them when they were the Atlanta Flames. How relieved were you when you found out they were moving up to Calgary?
Well, for you boys living in Jersey, here's the way I looked at it. Our farm team was in Birmingham, Alabama. And I thought, if I don't make it to the National Hockey League and I only get a cup of coffee in the minors, what better place to go and see Southern Bells and the United States of America than Birmingham, Alabama? I never got to see it, but that was my backup plan, and I wasn't worried at all about having to go to the minors, although I never did.
You played on the team for, what is it? It looks like about 15 years, was it?
10 years, and then a brief comeback.
Hell of a career. So when did you earn a captain of the team?
You know, Bob Johnson came in my third year, and he had a much different approach. He brought a very, very fresh set of eyes to the National Hockey League, and we had two gentlemen who are still great friends and were in our great leaders, a guy by the name of Dougie Risebrough and Lanny McDonald. And Doug and Lanny were, and still are older than me, they were co-captains. Bob decided that rather than having one person be captain, he would spread the duty around. Part of that was simple logistics, where when guys get older and they get hurt, who's going to be the captain? And Dougie was hurt a lot. Lanny was having some injuries, and I think that was probably part of his decision. And the other one was, why not spread the load? And so we would alternate every five games. And then in 84, 85, I believe, through a team vote and Bob and the other coaches' decisions, I became one of the three captains. And Doug retired after 86, and then it was Lanny and I right through until we won the cup.
Yeah, you've had a very long career, never really missed much of games. I think Wikipedia said you missed like 24 or something like that.
Yeah, I saw that too. That's amazing.
How do you survive kind of like that? Because I remember the old 70s and 80s, and all you see is pictures of guys smiling with 10 teeth missing, no helmets. How do you survive in a kind of a league like that?
Well, I mentioned Al McNeil. The other thing that Al McNeil said to me when I came, he said, look, this game is changing. He said, if you want to play in the National Hockey League, you will never get a better chance. If you understand conditioning and you get in top physical form, that just gives you an edge that others can't compete with. He said, learn to keep your lumber up. He said, sticks are a lot cheaper than teeth. He said, protect yourself. And he said, you can play a long time in the National Hockey League. And so I took his advice to heart, and I trained, I like to think, harder than anyone, and that gave me an edge. And I also made sure that I always protected myself. I would never find myself going into the corner without knowing who was behind me. I wouldn't put myself in a position where if I happened to turn quick and somebody caught me, I'd go into the boards head first. And I kept the lumber up, and I kept my elbows up. And when you do that, it just gives you an extra split second to save yourself. And I saved myself many times. And throughout my entire career, I only missed six games due to injury. I separated a shoulder in Montreal through my own fault. And I got a big hit one time in training camp when I was just getting a little too cocky, and that caused me to miss a couple of games. But other than that, I didn't have any injuries to speak of. And one of the reasons that I retired when I did, notwithstanding leaving after we won the Stanley Cup and trying to go out on top, was I hadn't had any injuries, and I didn't want to be a player who played a lot longer and at 55, which I am now, or 60 or 65, was suffering with knees and shoulder injuries. So I'm very, very happy to say that I have got no lingering ill effects from playing in the National Hockey League. And I frankly credit Al McNeil for a big portion of my health. And the rest of it goes to my mom and dad, because I think I just got lucky with some good genes.
Yeah. It is funny you say that, like with the, hockey's such a physical sport, but so many of these guys are able to last a long time, it seems. Like, yeah, I mean, I guess I'm just talking about, like, grew up a diehard Devils fan, and just seeing Danico and Brodeur and Stevens and Breland and Elias is still playing. It's like we had a big chunk of guys who lasted 10, 15, 20 years, and John McLean, and it's amazing the beating you guys take, and you're somehow able to last sometimes two decades, even more.
Well, look, I'm not saying that guys aren't tough who play in the National Hockey League, but I really think that it's much more a combination of good luck and how astute and shrewd you are on the ice. The guys that you mentioned, I think of a guy like Scott Stevens. Scott played an honest, hard game, but I would put him in the same category to what I previously described. He did not put himself in a position where he would risk injury through setting himself up to get dinged. You'll probably recall the hit that he put on Eric Lindros. Yep. I look at Eric Lindros as the other side of that coin, bigger, stronger, probably tougher than certainly tougher than me, maybe even tougher than Scott, but not when you got your head down going across the middle of the ice. Yep. And when you do that and you run into somebody who is a comparable size who knows how to hit, you risk very, very serious injury. And if you've got a bit of a disposition to concussions or other sorts of injuries, and you add that to some poor choices, you find yourself with your bell rung, and it doesn't take long before you're nursing injuries. And in those days, guys were more inclined to play hurt. And when you play hurt, you're favoring something, and you probably increase your chances of getting re-injured or more severely as a result of that behavior. So Stevens, Brodeur, Danico, you know, these guys were smart players. They were tough, and they were tough to play against, and they didn't, in my recollection, give you a chance to run over them where they would risk a serious injury as a result of that.
Yeah, yeah.
What was – did you ever get into a brawl on the ice, or what's the most memorable one you can remember?
You know, I've got with my wife of almost 40 years
yeah,
now.
Yeah, so your high school sweetheart, huh?
She's a wonderful young lady. We've got four kids and two girls and two boys. Our youngest son is 21. His name's Quinn, and Quinn loves to go on YouTube and find these fights. There's one fight where I got into it with Bob Probert in Detroit.
Oh,
and I can go on about this one for a while, but I got to the penalty box and Mel Bridgman had been traded to Detroit after the fact, and he came over to me and said, "Are you crazy? What were you doing there?" And in the original part of the fight, I thought I had Probert tied up pretty good, and the referees came in and said, "Let him go." And that was kind of a common phrase back then. We used to joke about it being the three worst words in hockey: "Let him go." And so the fight started, and I thought that I would administer a bit of discipline to Mr. Probert. And I was sadly mistaken. He shook me off, and he beat me like a rented mule. And so Quinn is watching this altercation, and he says, Dad, come over here and look at this. He said, "You're doing this. The guy's doing that." He says, "Why didn't you do this and do that?" I said, "Quinn, I was just trying to survive. Because this guy was going to kill me. You know, give me a break for at least showing up." So I can remember lots of fights. I can remember lots of brawls. Back in the day, in our first year in Calgary, we had a series against the Philadelphia Flyers in our second round of the playoffs, and the Flyers were on the downslope of being the Broad Street Bullies, but mm-hmm. they were still an intimidating force with guys like Mel Bridgman, guys like Bob Daly, Ben Wilson, Frank Bave, Glenn Cochran, Hound Dog Kelly, Bobby Clark, Kenny Linsman, Brian Propp, Paul Holmgren. I mean, to a guy, they were wolf pack tough and mean. You know, it's one thing to be tough; it's another thing to be mean. And they were both of those. And when we would have altercations, it was not unusual to find yourself with more than one orange jersey, and that was hard. And so those different rhubarbs that we had. It would be interesting to go back if a guy could find the tapes and look at them, because they were wild. So a couple of those against Philly in the playoffs, I certainly remember. I remember one in 1986 against the Montreal Canadiens that was a little bit out of hand as well. But as you got through later on in the 80s, the league started to get wiser about penalties, and it did reduce the number of bench clearing brawls, which in my opinion was way, way too late in coming. I'm happy to see the way the rules have changed now, where you need to be able to skate and shoot and pass. Mm-hmm. It's important to be tough, but you need to have the fundamentals of the game, and you need to be very, very well conditioned. And back in those days, there were lots of guys who didn't have enough attributes to play a tough game in the way the game is today.
Yeah, I was going to actually ask you if you liked the game today as far as the rule changes and whatnot, and I guess you kind of answered it.
Well, I do. I mean, my view back in the day was the penalties were not severe enough. The teams that I liked to play the best were the Montreal Canadiens and the New York Islanders, and the Minnesota North Stars as well in the early 80s. They were three teams that were able and wanted to play good, hard, up and down, back and forth hockey. And if you wanted to mess with them, Larry Robinson was happy to answer the bell. Clark Gillies was happy to answer the bell. Bobby Nystrom was happy to answer the bell. But they just wanted to play. And if you played hard, you could have great games with them. And one of the thoughts that I had back at that time that I thought would make a difference is if you had an instigator in a fight, which there typically always was, that instigator should get thrown out of the game, and he should miss the next game, and the team should be required to play with one fewer players, because back in those days, if you had a couple of goons, it didn't matter what the guy did. They'd throw him out, and you'd just bring another guy in. So there was really no disincentive to misbehave, and as a result, the intimidation was rampant. And I got to tell you, there was lots of games where you were thinking about what was going to happen on the ice before you went out there.
I mean, that's kind of interesting, because nowadays there's really no true enforcers like it was back in the later days.
Few and far between.
Yeah, I mean, out of curiosity, going back to like the fight thing, like when you get into these brawls or you have a really rough game with these teams, do you hold on to a grudge, or is it one of those, like during the off season, you see the guy in the bar, hey, you stupid son of a, let me get you a beer?
Well, I would say I would pick choice A. you know, I can tell you, Molson, big beer company up in Canada, used to do a charity ball tournament in Niagara Falls, and all the teams would go, and I had a gentleman I play with who I'm still good pals with, a guy named Tim Hunter, and he was as tough as they come, and very honorable as well, and we were putting our team together and looking for guys to go, and we had lots of guys, I'm in, and I was one of those guys who said, love to go, and Timmy Hunter said, I'm not going to that, and I said, well, that's, you know, it's for charity. Like, he said, look, you know that I do this with 65 Roses, I do this with the Children's Cottage, I do this with Special Olympics, but I do not want to be involved with guys who I have no time for and who I want to beat up for their behavior when the next season starts. And so there was no love lost. But I can tell you that when I fast forward now, I did a charity event in Dubai a couple of years ago, and I ended up there with a gentleman who I spent a fair number of games trying to annihilate, a fellow named Kenny Linsman. And I got to tell you, I was sitting beside Ken in the dressing room, and after about 5 minutes of talking to him, I thought to myself, I would have loved to have played with this individual. Mm-hmm. You know, there was something about the way when we played, even though it was older we get, the better we were, fun game. I just knew where he was. I loved his competitive spirit. But back then, every time we played him, and for a long time afterwards, I had nothing good to say about Ken Linsman.
So, Jim, ultimately, you did a lot of things in your career, Winter Olympics, different tournaments, whatnot, but you got your name on the Stanley Cup. I mean, that has to be, you know, every kid who gets skates and a stick's dream.
Well, it is a dream, and the interesting thing is that when I look at how I got there, I'm just completely amazed at number one, the number of events that have to happen to have the good fortune to end with that result. There's lots of players who are better than me yesterday, and there's lots of players who will be better than me tomorrow who won't have their name on the Stanley Cup just because they got lucky. And I would tell you that it's a little bit unfortunate that we need to convince ourselves that somebody's a winner just because they had their name on the cup. I'm flattered that my name is there. I think of it as something that is a bit of a lasting legacy that will outlive me. But in a strange sort of way, I'm a little melancholy because I know there's lots of guys who played with me and were traded and went someplace else, and there's lots of guys who I never played with who deserved a Stanley Cup victory just as much as me, and the cards just didn't fall in quite the right order.
What did you do with the cup on your day that you got, or was it like that back then? I know like everyone gets some time.
Well,
with the
cup. You know, it wasn't quite as big a deal for a day with the cup. The National League wasn't as organized, but we did get a chance. It was more random. I'm sure there are lots of individuals who I played with in 1989 who didn't get a cup for the day. But when the cup ended up in Calgary, I had it, and it was during the Calgary Stampede, and they called and they said, hey, look, I know you've got the cup, but the Stampede is on, and we've had it committed for the grandstand show. And so do you think we could ever impose upon you to borrow it for an hour or so for the grandstand? And I had set up a big party in our neighborhood for our neighbors and friends to come over. And so had the cup in the backyard, and the Stampede showed up and borrowed it, and it wasn't an hour that they borrowed it for. so it came back. Fortunately, we had enough stamina to last into the wee hours, but it ended up in my backyard and on the kitchen floor. And
that's awesome.
One of my kids was at that time was putting their bare bottom in it. And
I always think about that when people drink out of that. All those babies that have been in.
Do not drink out of the Stanley Cup, or you know, take your antibiotics because you have no idea what's been going on in that chalice.
Yeah, Scott, don't drink out of it. I know you were planning on it this year.
That was on the challenge.
Don't do it.
But I always liked Brodeur. I think all three times he had it, he had a roller hockey tournament for the cup, like with his friends and family, which I always thought was pretty cool. And like he played like in it, but not as goalie.
Yeah,
I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, well, you know, there's lots of close friends that I had that got their pictures with it, and when I look back on it now, there's young boys and girls who are now grown men and women, and they still remember that party.
Hey, Jim, this might sound a little weird. I'm a Phillies fan.
Sorry, I had it too loud. Way too loud. All right, go ahead.
Start from the beginning?
Yeah.
Jim, let me ask you something. I'm not sure if you follow baseball. I'm a big Phillies fan. I'm a huge fan of their mascot, the Phillies Fanatic. Scott, he's a huge Mets fan. He loves Mr. Met. I see here that you guys actually had the first mascot of the NHL, Harvey the Hound. What was that like? Was he something that like the team embraced, or was it something when you all looked at him like, what the hell are you doing here?
So the gentleman that created Harvey the Hound lives down the street from me. His name is Glenn Street.
Oh, cool.
And he was he started this business and has gone on to build, if not one of the preeminent mascot businesses in the world. And where the idea came from, I'll have to ask Glenn, but I would give him credit for it. He created this, and the players just thought it was fun. In fact, a couple of years after I retired, our youngest son was having a birthday party, and I was doing some work with the Flames, and I ran into Harvey. Harvey was always been in character. He'd never talk, always quiet. And even though I knew the guy, right? And so I said, "Hey, Harv, what are you doing this afternoon?" And he kind of looked, and I said, "My son's having a birthday party. If you're around." And so he kind of wagged his tail and shook his head, and I took off. And so we're having this birthday party, and I'd forgotten about it. And there's a knock at the door, and Matt runs around the corner, and he looks through the side window, and he sees the big dog head, and he goes, "Hey, Dad, it's Harvey."
That's awesome.
He said, "He's coming to my birthday. I wonder how he knew." You know, so the goodwill that Harvey brought to the Calgary Flames, and what happened in a lot of other professional sports, I think has been just marvelous. And I can think of no player that didn't appreciate his antics and enjoy his company, whether he had the dog head on or whether he was out of character. It was he did some really funny things. He one time he got these little Harvey guys to dress up like pups, and so he made little costumes for them all. It was just hilarious, where he came out into the stand somehow, and then seven or eight little Harvey pups ran out behind him in identical Harvey costumes. He was always creative, falling on the glass and skewering his privates and falling over. incredibly fit. And as they say, as a result, lots of other very impressive mascots were created in large part from Harvey.
I don't think I recall him in the video either, so I think he was very smart.
Well, because he can't sing.
Well, neither can anyone else.
Touche.
So, Jim, you know, we got a couple minutes with you left, but I saw you did something. You stayed with the game for a little bit, doing some analyst work. Did you ever do any coaching, and are you involved in the game at all still?
The only coaching I've done is with my kids in minor sports. I don't have the patience to be a coach, and I recognize that. I'm not sure I understand the game well enough to be a coach, but I've always been interested in sport and the values that it propagates. And so I have stayed involved with the Flames since I retired on a volunteer basis. In the early 90s, started the Flames alumni, and it's still a very thriving entity here that I just relinquished the presidency to Jamie McCowan, so he's taken that over. Then in 2000, I went back to work there because the team was in danger of being sold, and season seats had declined, and the performance of the team had been lackluster through a lot of the 90s, and a gentleman took over the organization named Ken King, who I've got a lot of respect for. And so I went to work with Ken as VP of Business Development, and I said, look, I'm going to bust my butt here for a year, and we'll either fix this and it won't go anywhere and I'll do less, or we won't be able to fix it and it will be sold. And we got very, very fortunate. Calgary came to the party and bought tickets. The team started to improve, and each year I've done less work for the organization, but I still participate in different sorts of initiatives there, because I did start a leasing business when I left in 1990, and that continues to thrive. And I've gotten into a number of other business initiatives in Calgary and across Canada.
And Jim pretty much said, well, if you are going to move, let's go down to Birmingham so I can see some of them Southern Bells, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
We'll call ourselves the Birmingham Burners, you know?
And you might note as well, if it's too bad you can't speak to him, but the coach in Birmingham at that time was a gentleman named John Brophy. He just passed away a couple of days ago. And if you wanted to talk about brawls, he would be the guy to talk to. And if you have time sometime, I'm happy to relay some of those stories, because they're priceless in retrospect. At the time, they bordered on being criminal, but. With the passage of time, now they're funny.
Jim, you seem like a great guy. There's a lot of great things written about you here, and humanitarian, all sorts of stuff. But first and foremost, we'd like to thank you for coming on. And if people want to like check you out or say hello or tweet at you or see what you're up to, where can they go?
Well, you can send me an email anytime to jpoplinski@jimpoplinski.ca. What's my Twitter handle?
You know how long I had, you know how many times 24? I had to double check when I emailed you? I was like, Poplinski at Poplinski. I'm like, please get it right. Please get
it right.
I
got to tell you, I apologize, because the Twitter thing, I'm not quite sure still how that works. And on the messaging part, I never know who's looking at it and what's public and what's, so I'm a little bit careful there, but, I'm not tough to find. You can Google me and slip me a note, and I'm happy to give you a hand anytime.
His Twitter handle is @JimPoplinski24.
All right.
That gets me. Guys, good luck with what you're doing. It sounds like you're having fun. I don't know what else you do, but you got enough energy to make a difference. So keep up the great work and call anytime.
I like how we always have this, like, awkward silence. Like,
yeah, I wasn't sure if you were going to end it, or I'm like,
Well, that was Jim Poplinski. Pretty awesome. Awesome.
Very down to earth guy.
And we also, remember how we made our spreadsheets a while ago? We're like an NHL player. Like, mm-hmm. I wasn't even like really thinking about that. I'm like, oh, yeah, we got another thing off the list, you know? You know, let's roll right into this.
Yeah, sure.
Actually, I got to change a couple things. So, I'll try to do this as I'm talking here.
All right. Scott is pulling out a wire, putting in another one. Now he picked up one. Now he put it back. Now he's switching it. Switching is very important in IT.
Yes.
Sometimes the best way to solve a problem is switching stuff.
So that's Jim. We'll talk about him in a minute and whatnot. But I'm going to keep this rolling. Our favorite LGBT director, mm-hmm. who is going through a transition, for those of you who have not mm-hmm. heard our show before, AJ Matty, who goes from ex-Calgary Flames captain to LGBT director on the same show. Your boys.
Only Verbal Shenanigans.
That's it. But AJ has been checking in time to time every couple weeks or so. So I'm going to try to give him a call and get some info and see how it goes. Let's see if it works.
Good beatboxing.
Hey guys, what's going on? Oh,
for a second, it sounded like you were shooting yourself in the background. Like, no, a lot of noise going on. Do you hear us?
I guess not. See, I remember that switching thing you did. Don't do that again.
Yeah. Oh, I know what.
I know what I did. I know
what'd you do.
I'm a jerk. Right. Listen, I got a new soundboard here. I got the B team. Yeah, what do you want?
Hey, what's going on, buddy?
What's up, AJ Mattioli?
You know, feeling good. How are you guys doing today?
We're doing good. We have a very interesting show today. We just had the captain of the 1986 Calgary Flames, and now we have you on the show. Yeah. So you just never know.
So, AJ, tell us about your favorite moment in hockey in 86.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it was right when... Yeah, get the hell out of here.
Just like a man to blow us off, you know?
Yep.
Exactly.
So what's going on, man?
Talk about things, Jesus.
So what's going on? It's been a little while since our last check-in. I've seen some things on your Facebook, but I'm not going to give them away. I'm going to let you give them away. What's going on with the transition process here?
Well, pretty much about a month ago, I found out, sadly, my insurance isn't covering the injections themselves. Boom. So I found that out the day of my injection. Never really looked up some YouTube videos on how to do it myself, and then
that's how I learn everything.
Mm-hmm. I'm just gonna do it myself. So instead of paying for it out of pocket, so now my prescription's paid for through insurance, but I'm injecting testosterone into my leg, self-injecting already.
So yeah, how'd the first one go? Nerve-wracking, or were you just like, all right?
It was pretty nerve-wracking. I mean, I went to one of my friend's house who is becoming a nurse, so I felt like that was close enough.
He's just a junkie, is what you're saying.
Yeah. It turns out the testosterone was heroin. I really should have looked over that YouTube video better.
Hey, as long as he knows how to work a needle, that's all I care about. So, but it's kind of crazy. The first time I did it, the best way to describe it is when you inject yourself, you could almost hear, the needle going through your muscle, which is a very bizarre...
I think it's supposed to go in your leg, not your ear,
yeah,
AJ.
Yeah.
Not your ear.
My ear is so manly with hair right now.
Her ears are so jacked.
It's got like a Fu Manchu growing out of it.
But that's the only part of my body that has hair. It's just, like an intense old Italian man. It's very nice. But it's kind of like when you get your tooth pulled, like you can almost hear how it sounds.
Right.
Like it's a weird sensation to say the least. But I did it again last night, and it's getting easier and easier to stick a needle in my leg. It's kind of crazy how that works.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's like anything with people who treat themselves for diabetes, people who are on steroids, people who are, like we said, you know, like who are on drugs. I mean, I guess you get past the needle part of it.
The needle part, yeah. Makes me nervous for my my partying future, how easily I got over the whole needle thing. I was like, oh God, let's keep this to testosterone.
let's see what else we can put in there.
I have now transitioned directly to River Phoenix.
His movies are classics now that he did it, so just keep that in mind, AJ.
That's so 80s. Everybody overdoses on prescription pills from their mom's cabinet now.
Yeah, so. Right. But you could bring it back. Yeah. No, please don't bring
retro.
It back.
Oh, man. This
we find AJ's podcast, by, we're like, you are so old school.
I love it. So, yeah, that's what's going on with me. They wound up upping my dosage of testosterone, which was amazing. They doubled it because they were able to double it because I got my cholesterol under control. And
I was going to say that. Was that based on health?
Yeah, I'm all healthy-ish. So they doubled the testosterone, and I feel like I'm finally starting to see it a little bit in my face, and definitely in like my upper body, like my shoulders, which is nice to not actually have to do anything to get muscles. You know, just take some testosterone and skip the gym, I say. Oh. So
nice.
Yeah.
All right.
So that's what's going on over here.
Yeah. That's awesome. So I told you before, I know you're limited on time here. I do want to get into how can we avoid, you know, we need to talk about it, but the whole bathroom issue going on in this country. The whole bathroom issue. And you know, I know we even mentioned like a month ago we wanted to talk about it. I think you even messaged me, like, let's get on there and talk about it.
Well, it's so ridiculous. Like, I just assumed that it was going to kind of die out a little bit, and it's getting worse. Mm-hmm. I thought other states were going to be like, oh, North Carolina, you're like the, you know.
Come on and raise up, put your shirt up, and throw it around your head like a helicopter, North Carolina. Sorry, no one else, Petey Pablo, no one?
It felt appropriate. It felt appropriate.
I'm sorry, I let loose a little bit. I lost it. I'm back.
I was like, wow, you're making up those lyrics pretty fast.
No, that's a real song, believe it or not.
You know, I think it's just completely insane. The entire idea that, where do they think we've been peeing this whole time is my bigger...
I just figured
like,
it just started
like, that's
now.
That's my biggest question. Like,
I thought you've been holding it for 20 years.
Yeah.
You know,
you look at both sides, not that one. Yeah.
I truly don't understand the audacity of the people who are saying this is a family value thing, this is a family issue, it's about the kids. Well, it's clearly not about the kids. I mean, you know, I believe that, you know, if you break a law and you are, a sex offender, you do your time in jail. And I'm not saying that you should have to go around and tell everyone you're a sex offender, but if you're not going to limit the bathrooms that they use, you're really not, you're not concerned about the kids. You're concerned about your own agenda.
Right. It's almost like the transgender thing is getting combined with the idea of a sex offender. Like they're almost labeling one thing. Help me out. What am I trying to say? They're labeling one thing a different term almost. Like
Yes.
Did I get that right? I don't know. I'll just say North Carolina again.
Well, I mean, one of the bigger issues is, you know, CNN put out a story saying transgender people celebrate some victory. I don't know what the victory was. And it genuinely was a picture of all my drag queen friends. And I'm like, those aren't transgender people. Those are drag queens. Notice their giant wigs. So, like, when CNN puts things out that are false, when news sources are showing people drag queens who are bigger than life, that they look like, you know, clowns, you know, it's a much different thing than a trans person.
Right.
You know, and now the lesbian community is getting, you know, it's not just the trans people, it's other gays as well. Like, so many lesbians are getting harassed and beat up and because people think they're in the wrong bathroom, and it's getting out of control. And, you know, the fact of the matter is it's about... The same way, you know, I've been saying this for a while and other people have been saying it, you know, The same way it wasn't about water fountains, it's not about bathrooms.
Right.
Like, it's just another way to discriminate, another way to keep, you know, a foot on, you know, a minority's neck, which is, you know, the basis of America, you know, make sure you're better than somebody at all times. You know, so I mean, it's a frustrating and a depressing thing, because, you know, you turn on the news every day and, you know, there's two people who could be perfectly nice and perfectly wonderful individuals who are 100% for the LGBT rights, but they're two straight white cisgender people talking about whether or not I should be able to use the bathroom.
Right.
And that in itself is oppressing. Like, you can't turn on the news without someone talking about whether or not I'm going to touch that kid. It's like, we just want to pee.
It's kind of weird. It's like when you go to concerts and there's like a long line. And once in a while I've seen, like, sometimes some women are just like, you know, screw it, because, you know, our lines were just fast. They're like, hey, guys, can we just go in? We're like, yeah, go ahead. Go in the stall. And,
of course.
Everybody just thinks it's going to be like, oh, well, now we got to gang rape them. You know?
And it's just... Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the other thing is it's blaming the kind of blaming the victim in the sense of, you know, it's kind of like we don't teach boys how not to rape. We teach girls how not to get raped. And it's kind of the same thing. It's they're scared that transgender, that men who want to molest little girls are going to throw a wig on and say that they're trans. So your problem isn't really, their problem isn't with trans people, it's with perverted,
right,
heterosexual, exactly, cisgender men drumming on a wig and being perverts. So instead of, you know, instead of blaming us, maybe teach, you know, these men not to be perverts.
Yeah.
I think we were talking about in one of our older episodes with AJ, how, like, with gay marriage, it was like, finally, it's no longer going to be a political issue, and now it's almost like everybody's like, ooh, new one. Let's try it out.
Yeah.
Like, I remember.
And it's getting more and more ridiculous what these issues are. Like, now, you know, like, it's, you know, at least marriage was like, okay, like, all right, like, you know, I could see points on both. You know, obviously, I disagree with any Republicans against it, but I could see points on both sides. But with this, it's just absolutely ridiculous. It's, there hasn't been one, you know, one case of a transgender person doing this, yet there's been over 3,000 cases of molestation from the clergy in the last, I want to say, 9 months. You know, I read a post that said, if you're worried about men in dresses molesting your kids, the word isn't transgender, the word is clergy.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, it's, you know, so I think that, you know, utilizing religion to put, you know, push this agenda forward, it's like hypocrisy at its best.
You know why? You know what's messed up about gay marriage?
What?
That divorce lawyers are going to double their salaries, and I've paid them enough over the last year. I've paid them enough.
It's very true. I'm like, you're really just limiting how many white horses could get, you know, used for weddings.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, it gives them a whole new purpose.
I mean, exactly. You would be proud of me. I don't know if you saw a couple months ago, I was down in New Orleans, and I was at the Gay Easter Parade. That was an awesome time.
Oh, that had to be amazing.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It was cool because there was three parades. There was, like, the normal, traditional New Orleans one. Then there was, like, a, I don't know, some celebrity down there had his own one. And then, like, there was the gay one at, like, 4 o'clock. And it was just mayhem. It was mayhem. Yep. It was awesome.
Yeah.
It was, like...
Yeah, you guys should definitely come down to the gay pride parade this year and broadcast from there.
Sure, ma'am.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
there was floats full of drag queens. It was awesome. It was so much fun. But yeah, I know you have to go.
I have to go to work, sadly.
Mm.
Sadly, your podcast haven't made me worldly famous yet. Just, well, New York famous.
Just mildly famous.
Yeah. Yeah. We're getting into intercontinental a little later on.
Nice. I'm huge in Germany. So.
You have to leave now, though, right?
All right, guys. Well, you have a good one. I will talk to you soon.
All right. Talk to you soon, brother.
Catch you, man.
All right. Later, buddy.
Bye.
Bye.
Yeah, he told me he literally had to leave at 7:52.
Oh, okay. No problem. No problem. No,
we'll play that game with him another time.
Yep.
So, yeah. Wow. So, those, I think, are the two polar opposite guests, you know, we can have. The only thing, maybe, like a Klansman in AJ, that would be like, maybe.
I could have got 10 points if I would have arranged that.
Could have, yeah. You should be able to find that. I think
I think so. Yeah. There's actually a guy in my apartment complex that's hanging a Confederate flag.
Hmm. Yeah, that's great.
It's one of those.
It's great in Flanders, New Jersey.
Yeah,
that's kind of
the weird thing. It's like, are you recruiting people here? Did you? You kind of lost about a couple hundred years ago.
Yeah, maybe you start down south
and
work your way up.
They're more into it, I think. I don't
work
know.
Your way up the East Coast.
Yeah. Go to like the tip of Alabama, the southern part, and you just keep on working your way up.
Yeah. Speaking of our shenanigans showdown, I see you earned another couple points.
Yeah, I did a food challenge. I did the fall curry challenge. I think that was like the first episode of Man vs. Food, and it was like a really early YouTube episode for Randy Santel, but it's supposed to be like the hottest curry in the world. And I went down to Montclair, New Jersey. This is the kind of life I have, and it's like, the girl was working. I think I asked you, were you chilling tonight? You're like, yeah, I got a couple things. I'm chilling. It's like 8:45. I'm like, screw it. I'm just going to eat the world's hottest chili, right? curry right now. So I drove 40 minutes, went down there, and went through the whole thing where it's like, I don't know how legal this is, but they're like, on the menu, it says, well, you have to declare out loud that you understand what's going to occur.
Swear on the Bible?
Yeah, pretty much. I'm like, I don't really think this is going to work in court if, like, my stomach has an opening of, a golf hole, you know?
A golf hole.
Yeah, golf hole.
Okay.
And that's what they have in golf holes.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happened in my stomach.
Right.
So that's what I would sue about.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Keep going.
Army Lane.
Yep. Here we go.
All right,
keep going.
So, got the phone out, made sure it was extra charged, and did a Facebook Live where everybody basically complained. They're like, you're going in and out, it's choppy. And it's, I'm like, yeah, I don't really think they have Wi-Fi in this curry house just for idiots like me doing this challenge. But it was pretty hot.
Yeah.
It was
one of those lasting hots.
Yeah, it's one of those, you start chowing down into it, and this ain't nothing. This is good. You know, you got a little warm, but it's fine. And then, like, 3 or 4 minutes in, you start to realize it's like, oh, yeah, you kind of got me here, you know?
Did you paint the toilet the next day? Like, one of those, like, where it just hits the back of the toilet.
It did come out juicy for a couple days, I will admit that. It took me about 20 minutes to get through the challenge. Was sweating through it. Not many hiccups, but I got through it. Got
so
my challenge.
You just have to finish the challenge, right?
Yeah, there's no time. It's one sitting, no time limits. I use a Coke here and there to kind of calm it down, but it's like a 3-second relief. But I got the whole thing down, got my certificate. I got a beer mug at a place which can't serve beer, even though you're supposed to get a free beer.
Nice.
And that's 5 points for me.
Yep. You're on a roll. You got the Dykstra picture. Yeah, you know. We got to post a little updated score.
Yeah, it's 40-15 right
40
now.
40-15. 40-15.
Well, I mean, we're halfway through the year. I mean, just out of curiosity. I mean, you don't have to go into details. Have you had plans for some of your...
I got a couple things in the works. I got a couple things in the works, but I'm not telling you.
That's fine.
But you, let's see how you're doing with this.
Oh. Yeah.
We didn't start the fire.
Yeah. I think we did that last week.
Let's see how long you lasted.
All right, freeze. I said freeze. Yeah, that's I'm good.
See if you get the first verse.
Harry Truman, Doris Day, and Strange Young Legs. I got the first four words.
Harry Truman North there. China.
Wait, it started to fire.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's one of those. It's like if you start charging and you got a lead, it's like, all right, in like October, November, I better double down on that one.
Yeah, maybe. But this is Pete Pablo with North Carolina.
Ah.
I'm telling you, it was a real song.
Yeah, you can't start a flame when it's red hot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Petey Pop. North Carolina, come on and raise up. Take your shirt off and throw it around your head like a helicopter. North Carolina, come on and raise up. Throw your shirt up and twist it around your head like a helicopter.
You know what I'm thinking about when you're telling me that?
When how great this song is?
It's a great song, but it makes me think of that open micer you told me about in the in the comedy contest where he's like, I got a big dick. Woo! And then he pulled out the dildo, and here it is. Woo!
If he did that, and then this came on,
you'd be jumping on stage with him with your shirt off. Oh yeah.
Ooh, 4.6. So, that's my friend Petey Pablo. All
right, cool.
Put him on the list. I want to try to find him.
Petey Pablo?
Petey Pablo, yeah.
We'll work on that. We got a few minutes?
Yeah, why not?
All right, so I want
to
kind of...
Considering our episodes are just going from like an hour and a half to two, basically we're going to have our own network
soon. We're just 2 hours behind Talk Brunch with Rick Dara. Your buddy. Mm-hmm. But, so, a little journey we had last night. Petey, I'm trying to. I like the barbecue in Carolina.
North Carolina.
Petey,
come on, raise up.
Yeah. So, here's a kind of a little adventure me and my girl had last night. So.
A little adventure me and the girl had last night.
So, we came back from dinner, she actually made me keys for her apartment complex.
And my god.
Yeah, it's bad.
Dungeon keys?
No, that's...
We went to
I
the
made
black...
that for my sister. Had to smelt it myself. So we have a little game. Like, when I made her keys, she struggled all the time getting into my doors. So I'm like... So she's like, all right, you do it. So she has, like, the entranceway to, like, her walkway and her apartment. And I struggle a little bit with the first one. She's giggling and all that. And we get in. And she's like, let me see what you do with the second one. So,
ooh, I like where this is going.
Yeah, so there's the regular knob lock, and there's...
Chuck knob lock?
Yeah. He was just sitting there. What are you doing here? Nowhere else to go. Twins won't call me anymore.
We're not really doing much.
And there was the bolt lock at the top. So in my apartment, my bottom lock really doesn't work that well, so I always lock from the bolt. So that's the first
people,
one I go to.
Break the top lock when you try to break into Berlo's apartment. The top lock.
I dare you to come in.
You're like that, what movie is that where the... Training Day, where he's got all the booby traps, like, and stuff like that.
So I'm working on the top lock, and she kind of tells me, no, I don't have a key for a top lock. I never locked the top. And it just kind of moved a little bit. I'm like, all right. So I go down to the bottom one, and I unlock the bottom one. Then we realize the top one is locked, and there is no way of unlocking it.
Nice. Yeah. So... She gave you access to her apartment, and you managed to lock both of you out of her apartment.
Nope. We're not that serious. Nope. We're trying to figure out who to call. We get the guy who's a super at the time, and he comes over in a golf cart, And he's pretty much like, nobody has the keys to the bolt lock.
I heard keys existed many moons ago. Well, stuff of legend. You must climb the mountain.
You must take the challenge of the elf. Four trivia questions.
You must carry rocks on your back for 30 days on the harvest moon to get your keys to the top.
You must hold this dirt and grow a single pea in 30 days.
And nurture that pea until it becomes a grown pea. And plant that pea and feed it to a one-eyed Chinese child.
We couldn't find a Chinese child.
Yeah, right. That's like everyone can find a Chinese child.
Yeah, they all have two eyes for what we understand.
Right.
But, so he's, like, calling, like, the people who own the apartment complex, and they're kind of dicks, and they're pretty much like, our office is open at 10, we don't do anything prior to it, and hang up on him.
Right.
And I forget who the second guy was. I think he kind of a co-worker or something, but he comes over, and it got to the point where, like, all right, we just got to bust this in. So they're getting, like, all their tools out. They're, like, drilling holes into her lock. They're, like, smashing it with, like, a crowbar. And we're sitting outside for an hour. Meanwhile, like, every neighbor's, like, opening up the door. Is everything all right? Yeah, we're good. We're just locked out right now. You want to come in? No! We're almost there. We're almost there. So we were sitting outside for probably an hour and a half. As they're just, like, every level of the bolt lock trying to get it through. They even, like, they chop out the top part where you put in the key, and they're still like, we can't move this bolt anywhere. So they're, like, digging into the bolt, like, basically sawing into the door.
They probably thought someone's dead inside the neighbors, and they're trying to rescue somebody.
Well, the weird
somebody.
Thing was, like, they brought up that, well, there's a possibility, because they brought out how some, like, homeless guys, like, go into these houses. Apparently, like, one of
they probably thought you were one of them.
What? Wait, you want... Oh, I see why you want to get in. He's out here.
Is that a 2008 Philly shirt, son?
Yeah, keeping it retro. I couldn't find my 86 Mets championship. But... So we had to sit outside for an hour and a half. They basically bust down the door, and the fixture was basically put duct tape over the hole.
So now your girlfriend lives with a door with duct tape over the hole?
Pretty much.
What a protector you are.
Yeah, I know.
So now you've given her the gift of a glory hole.
No, there's duct tape over it, so no dicks can come in to get her.
Yeah, only you.
Only me. Damn you, Carolina. What? Stop helicoptering. Stop that.
Yeah.
That's no victory.
There's a version of the song where he doesn't just name North Carolina. He names, like, every...
South Dakota!
Here, I'll show you it. Petey Pablo Raise Up World Mix, I think it's called. Petey Pablo Raise Up the U.S. Flag
Ooh.
Remix? Oh, the All Cities Remix. So let's take a look here.
Does Petey Pablo raise the 86 Calgary Frames?
So why don't you try to say that again?
Does
Petey Pablo know the Calgary Frames?
That's very racist of you, the way you said it.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, here we go.
Petey
Pablo. We're going to get him on.
All right. Yeah.
Here we go. Come on and raise up. Take your shirt off and twist it around your head like a helicopter. South Carolina.
Ah.
Us. Hot Atlanta.
Ooh.
State of Virginia.
Who am I? Petey Pop, motherfucker.
So
there's a little more to this also, this story.
Oh, there's more?
Yeah.
Okay, so
after
the glory hole.
After the huge hole in the door, we kind of had a little spat and stuff.
Ooh, not gonna, a
not gonna,
tiff?
Yeah, not going to get totally into
that. You had a little tiff.
Yeah. Mm. We had a little tiff or whatever, and you know, we made things up, and we're like, all right, we're going to go for a walk. Meanwhile, it's like 11:30 at night, and we're basically walking 3 miles, and we're in like the middle of a park, and we're like chasing bullfrogs and pitch black.
Wait.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wait. You can't just throw it out there and then try to continue with the story. So you go.
Well, there's a third part, so I'll just keep that in mind.
So you go for a walk at 11:30 to go chase bullfrogs.
Well, not.
I'm starting to think the two of you huff paint.
Not specifically chasing bullfrogs.
I love you. I love you too. We gotta make up. Let's go chase bullfrogs. I know. That's great. Yeah. Let's do it. I just picture like you guys seeing all these colors and like tripping. Were you looking for bullfrogs to lick?
Because you're kidding. we walked for what seemed like miles and miles. We got to a park she talked about, and we're by the lake. And it's like, oh, look! There's bullfrogs close by, and we're like trying to look at lily pads to find them and stuff. But after a while, I'm like, babe, they know we're here. They're going to jump in the water. We got to go.
Wait. So you're like...
I'm the responsible one.
You're like, the bullfrogs know they're here?
Yeah. You know how you get closer to a bullfrog and they'll just go quiet, kind of like a
what
cricket.
What the hell are you talking... The bullfrogs know we're here, honey.
There's one over there.
He's telling you.
Don't get too close. He's going to be quiet. He's going to be quiet. He knows we're here.
So after the quaaludes wore off.
Yeah. So we start walking back, and we're like in this little rural neighborhood, but apparently in this little neighborhood, some guy has horses in the neighborhood.
Oh, here we go.
Yeah, so so we go up, and you know how I am with dogs. It's like, oh, it's a horsey. Let's go scratch it and stuff.
So let me preface that for anyone who doesn't listen to this show, which is pretty much everyone. So Mike has a what I can only describe as a condition where if there's a dog in the room, he has to literally like drop a conversation. Like you'll be talking to him and he's like, oh, dog. Yeah. And put it this way. We were at we went to this brewery in Conshohocken.
Yeah.
After our 4 breweries in a day trip. And we're out on this deck area where dogs are allowed. And I remember talking to Mike, like, oh, this beer's pretty good. And it's like he saw a squirrel, like he's a beagle, and just darted towards... First, he's petting one dog.
Then I noticed there was a dog on the other side.
This is where it got weird. Because you went to the other side of the deck while someone was holding the one dog, and you're petting that one.
Yeah.
And Mike will blast through conversations. It doesn't matter who's in between them.
Seriously, my grandmother's dying, and where are you going?
Yeah, like, if you were ever diagnosed with a terminal disease, I would just bring, like, a puppy to you, and be like, stage 4, man, stage 4. You know what I mean? Like, all right,
I
good
love
night.
Cancer.
Good night, sir. You know, like it's amazing. It's borderline retardism? Maybe I'm retarded, but...
No.
Anyway, it's like you remind me of like Lenny from Of Mice and Men. Right. Like one day you're gonna kill a dog by mistake,
and I will hug him and I'll call. Uh oh.
I just wanted to pet the rabbit, George.
Obi ain't talking anymore.
Obi's so sleepy.
So we're petting these horses in this neighborhood, and like one of the horses was.
Do you listen to the sentence? Yeah. So we're petting these horses in this neighborhood.
Yeah. And the one horse was kind of shy, so it walked away from us. So we were like petting
that's not
the other
shy.
Horse.
That's scared to death of you.
Yeah. Well, I'm petting the one horse, and so is Isabel.
I got a story that I don't think I've ever told before. Go ahead.
And, she's like, oh, the horse nipped me. And she's like, be careful and stuff. So we're like, scratch it. And then all of a sudden the horse is making like weird faces where it's like sticking out its top teeth at us and then kind of like moving its jaw to the side while sticking its tongue out at us.
Mm-hmm. And that means like, I hate you, motherfucker.
I didn't get that at first because I went back. And then he kept doing it. And I'm like, all right, maybe that means I hate you, motherfucker. And then we went home and we went to sleep. And that was my night. Evening time with the Burloo.
I don't...
Scott, you're shaking your head. I've never seen that before.
I don't really know what to say to you anymore. Yeah. It's like now you're like, you're buying into it, and you're just... Let's go pet horses in the middle of the night and do peyote.
Yeah,
and
it was like quarter after midnight when we did it.
Now, you say horses in the neighborhood. Now, did you just intrude on someone's property?
No.
Did you climb over a fence?
No. We were walking on the sidewalk.
And horses appeared.
Hand to God. I'll bring you to the neighborhood.
Wait. What do you mean they just walked up to you?
There's like a wooded gate, and this person has like a big house.
So they were behind a gate.
But it's right by the sidewalk. It's not like I walked onto
But there was a fence there.
Yeah, I didn't go over.
You're making it sound like you're walking around, and all of a sudden these horses like came out of the woods.
Yeah,
like, hello.
They were magical.
Hello.
Hello, Michael.
Do you like my horn?
We were waiting for you.
Follow us on this rainbow.
Babe, we better listen to that horse. He knows something.
Wow. Mm. Wow, it's all looking. So, in one night, you knocked your girlfriend's door over. Gave her a glory hole, took her to visit bullfrogs, and went on a magical horse thing where the horse nipped her and you didn't even defend her honor. You should have fought the horse.
No, he was giving the tooth look I just described
to you. He would have messed you up. That's right.
Scott, I'm in jail. I was doing good in the fight, but that horse, man, he's got a good back kick.
Oh, man. Real quick before we go, this is a lot of years ago, it's probably 8-9 years ago, my friend Bob and I, he invited me down to some girl's house, they were having like a party, and her family owned like a ranch, and we all get loaded and whatnot, and there's horses on the ranch, so me and Bob in the middle of the night decided to go into the middle of the corral, we sneak in, and before it she's like, don't mess with our horses, do whatever you do, don't go mess with a horse and whatnot. So now, because I've rode horses a lot, I'm drunk. Automatically, that makes me the horse expert. You know, like
the horse whisperer.
Yeah, I have a horsemanship merit badge, so obviously I am like Black Beauty's boss.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So we're like petting the horse in the middle of this field, and we're like going behind it, which is like rule number one: you don't do. But then it turns into a.
All right.
It turns into a I dare you to touch the horse's dong contest. And it was seconds. Like, all right. You got to touch it. You got to touch it. And then it was like, can you keep it on for 5 seconds? So, yeah. Eventually, I think I won and I had touched the horse's dong for like 8 seconds or something like that. And then it started getting a little sketchy and we left. Yeah. And then, like, somehow.
Like, hey.
Yeah. Somehow the woman the next morning was like, did you guys go play with the horses last night? I'm like, nah, not at all. Like, But
I smell one of your challenges for next year.
Which is what? Beat my horse dong record?
Yeah, exactly. You gotta go double time. 16 seconds on a dong.
The name of my album. Anyway, yeah. I think that's wrapping it up here.
That sounds like a good way to end an episode with horse stories.
Yes. Burlo, anything to promote?
I will promote our friends down in Pocono Raceway next weekend. They're coming back, NASCAR, and their first ever Xfinity race at Pocono Raceway, June 4th, Pocono Green 250. Then on Sunday, the Exalta We Paint Winners 400. Great people down there in Pocono. Always a fun time. Always plenty of parking. Great event. Go to PoconoRaceway.com and buy tickets.
And I'm going to promote, from our last episode, I'm going to promote Kevin Goatee and his show, Comics Watching Comics.
Very nice.
Check it out on YouTube. All you got to do is type in Comics Watching Comics. And any comics listening, I know he's taking submissions for episode 3 and 4 and 5 or something like that. And he's having a live show coming up with the comics from the first couple episodes. So
just remember, if you call him, he doesn't give you warm welcomes.
No, doesn't give warm welcomes. No. Doesn't give you warm welcomes. So, everybody, that is the end of tonight's episode. I hope you enjoyed it.
Calgary
tune in
Flames,
next week.
LGBT, we should be... and horse dongs.
Yes. Tune in next week. We should be at Manskirt Brewing.
Ooh.
Doing another podcast from a brewery, so we should be back there. Life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the goddamn wind at your back, people.
And be careful when you pet a horse at midnight.
Or if you want to go on a date with this man, he'll lock your door, give you a glory hole, take you for bullfrogs, and a horse
walk. It sounds romantic.
I can't.
Scott, where are you going? Scott.